Food for the Imagination with your host Paula Granquist is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thanks so much for listening to the show that celebrates creating and stories. We are going to jump right in. We've got a big show for you today. We have this morning coming up two sections of the show, so I want to go ahead and get started right away. We'll have some music in the in-between time, and I want to just let you know a little bit about one thing I've been thinking about, and that is play. I feel like play has been missing from my world these days, and that's probably why I love to do Art Zany Radio. It's kind of like I get to play every week when I come into the studio, and it also reminds me that play is an important part of life. It's wonderful, it's magical, and I think it's essential. That's the one thing the radio show has taught me. So I wonder if you remember what you used to play as a kid. I think our history of play teaches us a little bit about our essential selves, and so we must learn to reconnect with that and find that out. So ask questions about what did you do with your toys when you were alone? What did you pick in your free time? What you were doing when time slipped away? I think that's kind of a cool thing to think about. And I always hope this show inspires you to try something, to remember something, to experience something, and definitely to find the joy of play in your life. So today, as I mentioned, we have two sets of guests. First in the studio, we have Rachel Hyder and students from the Northfield Arts Guild Purple Door Youth Theater production of Les Mis, the school edition. And then I'm going to feature an interview with the extraordinary folky musician Lucy Kaplansky. So I'm very excited to share both of these stories to you. I am going to open up the mics and introduce you to our first set of guests. Les Mis School Edition is what we're talking about today. If you know the classic Victor Hugo novel, this is the story of that as it comes to life. This is a school edition, so we'll learn a little bit about what that is. But I'm going to turn on the mics and let everybody tell me a little bit about an introduction, who you are, maybe where you go to school, what got you involved in theater, and if you have any French connections, because I think that might be something we could talk about today. Let's start down on the end.
Hi, my name is Kaya Schomburg. I go to Northfield High School. I'm a sophomore. I've been doing theater since I was very young. It's always just been a big part of my life, whether it's singing, dancing, or acting, or my favorite, doing all three. And French backgrounds. I mean, I really like making macarons, but
that's the closest.
Other than that, not really.
That's a good connection. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't expect that. That's kind of an exciting thing.
Yeah.
What is the trick? Because they are very difficult to do.
They are. You have to like buy this almond flour, and then you got to let them like sit for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very. They're very particular about how they dry, and
yeah,
you don't want them to crack.
Yeah.
So if you've mastered that, that's a pretty exciting thing.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of friends who like to.
Oh yeah, they enjoy my talents as much as I enjoy making them, I think.
Well, welcome to the show. I'm excited you're here today.
Thank you.
And we'll swing the mic over and introduce our next guest.
Hi, my name is Henry Hilleman. I am a senior at Northfield High School. And let's see, I am playing the role of Javert in Les Mis. And French connections, I actually have a few relatives who live in Paris.
Ooh.
So that's fun.
And so have you been able to visit them? Have they?
I have.
Ah, what?
Yes, I have visited them twice.
Okay, and tell me about what was your favorite thing about being in Paris, something a lot of us dream about.
Just seeing all the sights, the Louvre, the Eiffel Tower, Notre Dame, it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Breathtaking.
Yeah, and the bakeries.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It is amazing. And all the sidewalk cafes, were you there in a time of season when you could be outside and enjoy?
Yes, I was.
What was your favorite beverage?
Favorite beverage? I'm a coffee lover. I enjoy my coffee.
Oh, good. Yeah, and does it taste different in Paris?
A bit, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
Lucky for you. Mm-hmm. That's extraordinary. Thank you for being here. You've been here a couple other times before, so...
Yes, I have.
You keep returning to theater. What do you think it is?
Oh, I really have no idea. Same with Kaya. I've been doing theater pretty much my entire life, theater and singing mostly. Something about it just keeps drawing me back.
Well, we're lucky for us that you get to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we also have another student. Welcome to Art Zany.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Zachary Opseth, and I'm playing the role of Jean Valjean. I actually haven't been doing theater as long as these guys. I've only been doing it since I was in eighth grade, and that started with like an acting class. But the moment that I first got into that, wow, it was eye-opening, and I knew it was something that I loved to do, and I started doing shows and eventually ended up here. But I've been singing all my life, and as kids, like, we would make little spy movies and stuff, so it's always been a small part of my life. I am not French at all. So.
And do you have any French connections?
The only French connection that we do have is that my grandpa's last name, Oliphant, is French, except he was adopted, so we're not French.
I think everybody could somehow, because we want to find that French connection. I think that's pretty exciting. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having us.
And also, Rachel Hyder is here. You are.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's exciting to see you again. You are the performing arts manager at the Northfield Arts Guild. But this Purple Drawer Youth Theater, you do everything. You manage, you direct, you teach.
That's right.
You do it all. So this is exciting to be doing this production. This is a challenging piece for a youth theater to be doing.
It is. And it is our first musical with Purple Drawer Youth Theater. And, you know, we just jumped right in. We took the what many argue to be one of the greatest musicals ever. I mean, it won best musical. It won best score. It won best adaption, you know, for the script part of it. And it is an epic musical. It's big and flashy, and yet on our stage, we have a little tiny stage, and so it makes the acting and the singing even come more into your soul when you're sitting there in the audience. So I'm very excited to be putting this particular show on our stage.
Exactly. And we should ask, you know, tell people, because this is the school edition. What does that mean when you say school edition?
Well, it simply has been cut down a little bit for time. The original is nearly 3 hours, and this is closer to two. And there's the story is the same. There's still some what we would call PG-13 themes, topics in the story. So it's not like you can bring your six-year-old and they're going to laugh. But I don't think anyone other than a diehard would even really notice a big difference.
So you still get all those favorite songs, all that great character, all the battle scene, you know, pieces.
You bet.
And the thing that I actually saw this on Broadway. It's the one musical I've seen on Broadway. And I remember the big giant ship. So I've been sitting and wondering how you are going to have a big giant ship.
There's no
stage.
Big giant ship.
I didn't think it could fit on the Arts Guild stage.
Nope.
But it's certainly, it's moving, it's beautiful, it's a great story, and it's exciting to see that it's coming. And we should talk about dates, because you guys open up on March 9th.
That's right. We play for two weekends, but seven performances. So the first weekend is actually already completely sold out.
Oh, so did you hear that, folks? That means if you're interested, you got to grab your tickets.
Right. So then the second weekend actually has a Thursday performance, the 15th, and there are still seats for that day, and there are still seats for that Friday and Saturday. So the 15th, 16th, and 17th still have seats. And the other wonderful thing about the Arts Guild Theater is that we also have what are called jump seats. And those are eight kind of backless stools that are on the ends of the aisles. And we never sell those until an hour prior to the performance. So if you absolutely cannot come to one of those other performances, you can, you know, just sort of stand in line and and hopefully fate will be on your side and you will get one of those chairs.
And folks can go to northfieldartsguild.org online, easy to get tickets. I wouldn't recommend waiting till the day of the show to get your tickets. Do that in advance.
Yes.
Which is exciting. How does that feel for everybody here that the show is already sold out? I don't want to give them that wrong message that the opening weekend is sold out.
It feels kind of amazing, actually. I've never really been a part of a show that's sold out so quickly and sold out so many shows. It's quite amazing.
I think we have a great theater community here, and everybody's excited about this. So we should talk about if people, maybe there are people who have not seen the show. So you mentioned your characters. I'd love to hear a little more about your character and the story that goes with your part of the show. Should we start down here with Kaya?
Yeah, sorry, I actually didn't say earlier, but I play Cassette. She is very kind of an innocent character. She's very protected by her dad, Jean Valjean.
right over here, folks. That's yes. what she's pointing to.
And I think she's a very sweet character, but I think there's a lot more to her than just kind of the sweet little innocent, like, pretty dresses and stuff like that. I think she has a lot of emotion and a lot of stuff to share.
Yeah, and the costuming for this, I suppose, that has to be a big aspect of the show. You get some of those gorgeous dresses? And
yeah, it's pretty great. I'm not going to lie. Tanya is our costume director, and she's just amazing. She puts in so much work for us so we can look our best, and she's really good at what she does.
Yeah, we should give a big shout-out to Tanya
Legvold,
yes. I was going to say the other one, and I always Larson Legvold, yes. But I never remember. But yay, that's an important part of making a show come alive is having those costumes. And so let's keep going. Henry, you play one of the leads.
Yes, I play, as I said, the character known as Javert. He is a police officer, and his entire story is based around capturing this criminal, Jean Valjean. Because he stole some bread, and he broke his parole, which is unacceptable.
You're already jumping into character.
Yes. So Javert is a character that sees things entirely in black and white, good and evil. He has a lot of trouble seeing things in between, as, like, gray. So, but in this show, he is confronted with Valjean, who is a very gray character, and so my character really doesn't know, like, what to do with this information.
Mm-hmm. And we should mention this is after the French Revolution, and I don't know my French history very well. What years are we talking about?
So this takes place after the French Revolution a ways. Most of the story takes place in 1832.
Oh, excellent. This wasn't supposed to be a pop quiz, but...
yes.
Good job.
Yes.
And so there's... I would imagine your costumes as well. Are you in military attire?
Yes. My costumes that I've seen have been very military-based, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Big fancy hats, fancy jackets, yeah. I'm loving my costumes.
You're perfect for the role, then.
Oh, thank you.
And Zachary, tell us a little bit about your character. And you play, that was a really good summary and a good lead-in to your character, who's kind of the, as they mentioned, gray, mm-hmm. kind of pushes the lines.
Yeah, Jean Valjean is definitely more of a gray character. From the very beginning, he starts out stealing that loaf of bread. And it's ultimately for good, is to save his sister's son. And I think throughout the show, he really struggles with trying to figure out if what he's doing is actually for good or for bad. He has a lot of internal struggles, and he's a very thoughtful person. And ultimately, his story is a story of redemption, as towards the very beginning, he honestly lives a really rough life. He gets out of prison, he can't find any work, and he ultimately decides to steal again, as he thinks that's the only way to go. And what ends up happening is the person he tries to steal from, he shows him mercy when the guards bring him back to him. And that's something he's never really experienced before after 19 years in prison, and that's really changed him. And I believe that's really where he kind of meets God and really is changed and redeemed by that. And from then on, he tries to live a life of good and show mercy to other people. And sometimes it's hard for him. But throughout the show, you can really see that struggle, I think, in Jean Valjean.
everybody's been so well spoken about their characters, and we are talking about I'm not going to say it the French way. Les Mis. let's put the mic on Rachel, and she can say it, because I took Spanish, as I mentioned before on the show, and I can't ever get that French accent.
Les Misérables.
There you go. The school edition opens in Northfield Arts Guild Theater on March 9th, and you can get your tickets at northfieldartsguild.org. So how has it been introducing this show to, I would imagine many of these young people are not familiar with the show.
Oh, you are so wrong,
Ms. Paula. I am wrong! Okay, I shall be wrong.
Yes, in fact, a few of these folks that we even have here today have told me this is absolutely their favorite musical, and that's why they came to audition in the first place.
I love that.
I love that, too, because I saw the show 30 years ago, you know, when these kids weren't even alive, and I was exactly like them. I was just, oh, this is amazing! Mm-hmm. And the fact that I get to work on it right now is just, I'm just over the top. And the talent that we have in the show is really, really great. It brought the cream of the crop out. And it is a sing-through musical.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody ever gets a chance to not be singing, pretty much. and it is extremely challenging. We are so blessed to have Liz Shepley as our music director. Liz, of course, ran the Northfield Youth Choirs for a million years, just recently retired, which is the only reason why I got to grab her.
I'm sure you were first in line.
and Jana Hirsch is our choreographer. And
she's here, folks. She'll wave, yes. And she'll see her.
Yes, and it's not a big dance musical, but I wanted, if anybody's ever seen any of my musicals, you'll know I adore dance, and I really wanted to put that element in where we could, and I adore working with Jana. She's one of my best buds, so that worked out great. And we also have Deb Clark working with us. She's our tech director, so she's in charge of lights and sound and set and props and everything else. Kat Middledorp is not only our stage manager, but also our vocal coach, because she has a degree from St. Olaf in music performance.
I have heard her sing before, mm-hmm. And she has an extraordinary voice, really talented, fun.
Yes, absolutely. So we have a great team, and when we chose our Striking Conversations theater season last year, I thought, what could be a better Purple Door show that would embody that same thought? So I fully expect people to be coming out of the theater at intermission and after the show and striking up some pretty intense conversations.
Right. And we should mention Purple Door Youth Theater. This is not your ordinary theater experience. This is an educational program, mm-hmm. where all students are learning everything about putting together a show.
We have 7 dedicated technicians this year. And those kids never really step on stage. They do warm-ups with us and get some acting games and stuff that way. But they are hard at work behind the scenes, which is an equally important part of the theater.
Right. And so everybody learns, too, about marketing and, you know, putting together a show all behind the stage, in front of the stage, in the background. I think it's an extraordinary program, and folks can learn more at northfieldartsguild.org. Let me ask the everybody here what your experience has been with Purple Door. Some of you, this might be your first, and some have been involved for a while. What about that experience of creating a show from not just learning your acting part or your singing part, but really experiencing all aspects of theater? What has it opened up for you? What is it the most exciting part? Kaya looks like she's ready to jump in. Go ahead and swing the mic over. So
this is my first Purple Door theater experience. I find it really interesting to work with, just kind of see some of the younger kids, like she was talking about the techies, like they watching them almost like learn all these things, like they really help our show grow a lot. Like, for example, I have this one quick change, and this one little girl was like, yeah, I'm totally gonna help you, like I got you, like we're gonna do this, and she totally helped me out, and I was like, you know more than I do when it comes to this. Like, she was amazing, and I was just it was really awesome to see these kids and get to work with them and learn things from them too, even though, you know, like, I've had experience, and they're just, they're amazing to just be with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the great part of that experience. And Henry, I know you've done every Purple Door, am I right, that the Arts Guild has had?
Not everyone.
Not everyone.
There have been a few that I've missed out on.
Okay.
But I believe this is my fourth Purple Door show.
Okay.
And yeah, it's a blast every time. I love the community that it brings. Like, so many people who are in these shows, these Purple Door shows, are people I've been friends with for years, and I've made lots of new friendships thanks to it. As for the aspect of getting to learn, like, all about theater, like, from all angles, it's great. I've learned, over the years, I've learned a lot about set building and props and sound and light stuff, and it's really useful, because it lets me see, like, all the behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't usually think about when we go and see a show, but is equally as important as what's going on stage.
Mm-hmm. That's a big lesson. And I bet for Zach, this is your first Purple Door experience.
It is, yeah. It's my very first show, and I love it so far. It's amazing. I think, honestly, one of the coolest things that I've gotten to see is after one rehearsal, towards the end of one rehearsal, Rachel got all of us leads down to sit down on the stage, and we just sat there and kind of talked about our characters, and we spent maybe 20 minutes just going over what our character wants in throughout the show, and what's going on in their heads. And it was such an amazing learning experience, like diving into these characters. I really appreciate how much Rachel pushes us to find our characters, even if you're playing a minor role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every piece adds up to the whole show, and it makes it really essential that everybody have that understanding and have. How about the music? Learning the music, how has that been? I would imagine it's just for anybody to think about singing some of those songs, and as you said, it's a sing through, so you don't get a break where you just sort of mm-hmm. say some lines. You sing everything.
Yeah,
Zachary,
it's Well, most of us are familiar with the show, so it wasn't too difficult trying to, like, learn the lines and everything, because most of us already have most of the songs memorized.
Wow.
However, there are so many tricky rhythms and harmonies, and for those songs that you aren't familiar with, they're hard. And you have to sit there at your keyboard or with your computer and play the rehearsal track over and over until you get it. But it's so satisfying when you do.
Yeah, I would imagine. And you guys are about a week away from opening day. So, Henry, learning the music for you, it was something you knew the show ahead of time.
Yes, I do know the show very well. I was actually lucky enough last year to see a production of it at the Queen's Theatre in London.
Oh, wow.
Which was, to this day, the greatest production I have ever seen of any show ever. So I'm thrilled to be able to perform this show here. I love the music. I've been in love with the music for a very long time. So, yeah, like Zach was saying, like, most of us knew most of the lines already, or the lyrics. But, yeah, those rhythms are really difficult at times.
Yeah, and you all got to come together on that and make that be in the same tempo and remember the audience and remember, you know, your moves that you're doing.
Yes.
It's amazing. And
it absolutely is.
And Kai, you have a singing role as well.
Yes, I do. Cassette has lots of high notes that she sings, and I'm soprano, I love doing that, but, you know, it's a little intimidating at first. I was listening to the tracks, and I was like, oh my goodness, like, I have to do that, like, better nail that, but with our, like, amazing vocal, like, teachers that we have, they make it all so much easier and just more interesting learning all that, and the way that we practice is kind of, you sing, and you're singing, we're going to keep going, so sometimes that can be difficult, the transitions in between, but kind of getting into the rhythm of it, once you kind of feel it all click, it's one of the best feelings in the world.
I can imagine. And Rachel was going to jump in and say one thing. We're just about out of time, so we'll go ahead and wrap up here.
I was just going to say that that those high notes she now has completely nailed.
Amazing. Oh, thank you.
Well, I would imagine Kat has been really helpful with getting that experience. So maybe we'll just close with just a quick, tell us why listeners should go and buy their tickets today. One, so they don't miss out on tickets, but what do you love about the show that you want people to see?
I love the grandeur of the story. It's on one level very simple, and on another level extremely people will embrace it. That's why it's been a favorite musical for folks. It's not like, oh, I'm going to sit down and have a fun evening. It's not that it isn't fun, but it isn't light. It breathes your soul, your entire soul. So I cannot recommend it more. It's a fantastic show, and these kids will blow your mind.
Fabulous. And how about for you, Zachary? What do you think people should come and see it for? What reason?
Oh, I think they should come see it for the music, because they're going to fall in love with it exactly, probably, if not more, than we all have, for sure. Definitely.
So is it possible to love it more?
I don't think so. I think we love it more than anyone else in the world.
Well, I meant for you to enjoy, to learn to love it a little bit more.
Oh yeah, no. I'm sure we can.
And Henry, why do you think people should come?
Other than the reasons that were already stated, I think any Northfielder should definitely come, because there are so many people in this cast that you don't usually see singing a lot. Like, I've been in musicals before, but almost always as ensemble roles or very minor leads. So this is my first time having an actual, like, solo, like, me alone on stage. So, yeah, and there are, like, every character has solo lines. So people that you've never heard their voices before, you will hear them sing and you will be blown away.
That's a good thing to know, too. And fun. That's part of what I think that having the youth productions are, really. It's just to see the talent that we have and for them to have their own show and to be able to feature that and build on that for the next show and the following show is extraordinary.
Kaya? Yeah. Like Rachel said earlier when she was talking about some of the topics in this show, I think some of them are pretty heavy. And I think for some people coming to see this, it might kind of bring light to just different ideas, and seeing a younger crowd perform this might even enforce that a little bit more. And I think it's just been so amazing again to work with all these people.
Well, I am excited for this show. I thank you so much for coming to the ArtZany Radio Studio to tell us a little bit about it. I want to thank Kaya Schomburg, Henry Hilleman, and Zachary Opseth for being here, as well Rachel Heider, the extraordinary arts director at the Northfield Arts Guild, and for all that you do in theater. And I think you guys are going to have a smashing show, and so I'm very thrilled for you. So I appreciate it. Folks on ArtZany Radio, we are going to be flipping over and playing an interview with the fabulous Lucy Kaplansky, but first I'd like to go ahead and get started with a little bit of our music. This is called This Morning I Am Born Again from Reunion. Let's get that going on ArtZany Radio. I hope I get that right. Here we go. All right, Lucy Kaplansky.
This morning I was born again, and the light shines on my land. I no longer look for heaven in your deadly distant land. I do not want your pearly gates, don't want your streets of gold. This morning I was born again, a light shines in my soul. This morning I was born again, I was born incomplete. Stood above my troubles and I stand on my two feet. My hand, it feels unlimited. My body feels like the sky. Feel at home in the universe. rays crawl through my skin. I breathe the life of Jesus and old John Henry in. I give myself, my heart, my soul, to give some friend a hand. This morning I was born again. I'm in promised land. This morning shines on my land. I no longer look for heaven in your deathly distant land. I do not want your pearly gates, don't want your streets of gold. I do not want your mansion. My heart is
And that was Lucy Kaplansky from the reunion. That was This Morning I'm Born Again. I guess sometimes spring makes me feel a little bit that way. So I wanted to play that tune for you. Lucy Kaplansky is coming to Northfield for the 411 concert series. She'll be here Saturday, March 3rd at 7:30 at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater at 411 3rd Street West in Northfield. Tickets are available online, northfieldartsguild.org, under the music special series, the 411. Tickets are $25 for general admission. And if you don't know Lucy Kaplansky, she left Chicago after for New York City after high school, and there she found this great community of songwriters and performers, Suzanne Vega, Stephen Forbert, The Roaches, and others, and she had this great ability at harmony, and so she found herself singing with lots of folks, and especially singing with Sean Colvin, and they thought for sure that she was going to go on to you know, stardom. But she, what's really interesting about Lucy is she left the musical fast track to pursue a doctorate in psychology, which I really think is a fascinating piece of her story, and she is a fascinating person. She's sung on all kinds of records that you might mention. She harmonized on Colvin's Grammy-winning Steady On and on Nancy Griffith's Lone Star State of Mind and Little Love Affairs. She's on soundtrack credits. She sings with Suzanne Vega on Pretty in Pink, and she's just done so much. So you can check out her website, Lucy Kaplansky, KAPLANSKY.com, or come to the theater on Saturday, March 3rd at 7:30 to see her here in Northfield. We recorded this interview a little earlier this week. I know you're going to adore her as much as I do. So let's take a listen to the story of Lucy Kaplansky. And welcome to Art Zany Radio. I am so thrilled to have you here today. It truly is an honor to be able to hear your story, and especially to have you come back to Northfield and perform for us in the 411 concert series. It's something that I think is one of the coolest things that happens in our town, and it's just got an extraordinary reputation and lots of great entertainers coming. And so I'm curious for you, because you're coming from New York and you're doing a few Midwest dates. Is there a difference in the audience when you come to the Midwest, or tell us about your experiences from on stage?
Well, I mean, Minnesota in particular, I learned about Minnesota Nice like 20 years ago when I first started playing in Minnesota, and there really is something special about Minnesota audiences. They are warmer and more effusive and more welcoming.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Most places. No, it's really true. I don't know that it's a Midwest thing, but it's definitely a Minnesota thing. So I always, always, always have fun playing in Minnesota.
Well, I didn't recognize that was just a Minnesota thing. And I want to think, when I was thinking about putting the show together, I was thinking about the fact of a touring artist. I've never asked this question all the years I've done the show, about your first few minutes up on stage in a new town and a new venue. If you're making assessments about, okay, so tonight it feels a little hot in here, or it feels a little like everybody's stiff, or they're really rowdy tonight. So are you making those adjustments as you play your first few tunes?
Oh, I'm noticing all of that big time for sure. And every audience is different. Do I make adjustments? Yeah, I do. I'm not, the rowdy audiences are the easiest.
I suppose.
It's sort of like everything you do is fine. The quiet, more reserved audiences are harder because it's harder to gauge how they're liking the show. And you always, I mean, in my opinion, and for me, I always try to adjust the show to kind of fit the mood of the place. So I might do more quiet songs or talk less or talk more or not worry about being funny. I mean, it's just, it's sort of a minute by minute calibration or recalibration that I'm doing. And a lot of the time I've described it as riding a surfboard and you never know when you're going to fall off.
And there you
now,
are.
Now, I've never ridden a surfboard in my life, and I'd be petrified, which is, I guess, part of the analogy. It's kind of a scary thing, but it's also exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to, you're trying to stay on.
Right. But you have a whole audience watching you.
Well, yeah, right, exactly. I also have learned if you do fall off, you can get back on. And the show isn't over till it's over. And even if I have like what feels like not a great sort of first part of a show, it's not over and I can always come back. So I hope that answers the question, but it's a good question. And it's something you learn, I think, over just doing a million shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that has to be part of your, you know, because it would be something you can't anticipate until you're in the middle of it. And so that skill of being on the spot, you know, thinking about, like you said, all the different adjustments you make about maybe inserting faster songs sooner or telling more stories,
yeah,
or, you know, telling a joke or, you know, making,
yeah,
a comment,
exactly,
about the weather, you know, all that.
Exactly. And that's the only way I know how to do it. Otherwise, it's sort of rote, and I don't think rote makes for a good live show.
No, and that's the thing about music, is that that's why live is so incredible, because there is that back and forth. There's a pulse, an energy, a something that you can't get from listening on your headphones, or even if you've got a record, it's really cool, but it's still not the same as being in the room, which is...
It's really, really true. I was in a concert the other day, a tribute to George Harrison and a whole bunch of artists doing George Harrison songs, and I got to go out in the audience and watch parts of the show, and, you know, I don't get to see other people play that much, and it's, you know, you remember, oh right, this is why people come to shows, because there's nothing else like it. I forget, you know, I really, it's something you can forget as a performer what it's like for the audience, but when you get out in the audience you remember, oh yeah, this is a really special thing. And you know, it's a funny thing. I remember somebody said to me that the record business may, you know, records, CDs may just cease to sell, and who knows what will ever happen with the record business, but there will always be a market and audience for live music, because you can't reproduce that in any other way. You can't do it virtually or digitally. It's you show up and you see a concert, and there's no replacement for that.
And that is so true. I think that's the greatest thing to experience. And for folks tuning in, you can come to the Northfield at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater. We are having, the show is right around the corner. So if you don't have your tickets, you can hop online at northfieldartsguild.org and grab those tickets, or you can come to the door too. There may be a few left. It's at 8 o'clock, at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater. So it's on Saturday night, the 3rd of March. Very exciting. And you, I guess I think of you as folk artist. Is that a fair, I don't know if you have a different category you like to put yourself in.
You know, if people ask me what kind of music you play, I usually say folk, because that sort of conjures up something people understand, which is kind of stripped down. It's not pop music in the sense that, you know, I think folk people go for something try to write songs with more depth and perform songs with more depth. But I don't really think of myself as folk. I mean, I'm not sure there really are. I personally don't think that music genres really exist so much. Like, in other words, everything crosses genres. Like, you take an artist like, Steve Earle. He's just all over the map. Sometimes he's rock, sometimes he's country, sometimes he's very folky. And, I most artists are like that. Folk-ish.
That's fair. And I think that's true with, like you said, a lot of artists, you can experiment. And I think it's better if the artist has that opportunity and isn't in that zone where they feel like if I step left or right, I'm going to lose something. They're always true to whoever they are. And that crosses many paths. And so I'm trying to give people an idea of how your voice is and your songs. But you often tell stories. And that's the heart of it for me, I think. And that I'd be curious to hear about your ideas of how something becomes a song.
It's a really hard thing to explain. And the best way I understand, I can tell you that I don't plan. I've never been able to plan what to write about. It just has never worked for me. I've tried it a couple of times, and it's just a disaster. So something has to move me somehow. And then it just comes out of me. I mean, it's very sort of unconsciously driven, I think. And literally what will happen is I will just, I'll start a lot of the time pick up my guitar and just words will come out of me that I didn't plan on. I don't know where they came from. And then I don't even know what they're about half the time. And then you leave it and you come back to it and you kind of, it's multiple leaps of faith. Okay, maybe something's happening here. And then songs kind of happen. And then another thing is songs can happen and be really bad, and then you have to be willing to throw them away or completely change them. So that's sort of a quick summary of how it works for me.
Yeah, I am sure it's not something that you could write a manual, step one, step two, step three. It comes from many places, but I'm always curious.
Yeah, and it may be very different for other people, but I bet it's not that different.
Mm-hmm.
I bet, unless they're, there's writers for hire in Nashville who do it differently, but all the writers I know probably would say something similar.
Mm-hmm. And I love, and I am playing for our audience today, a song about pie, and Pie Day is coming up. It's March.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, March 14th. It's right around the corner. So you're going to have a little early celebration. I love the fact that there is a song about math, because when I was a kid, I was definitely a math geek and loved all things numbers. And so tell me, that's kind of an unusual one. I think that came from your family, yes?
Oh, yeah. No, it's written by my dad. So my dad was a mathematician, pretty well-known one, actually, an algebraist. And he also was a very talented piano player, and he also wrote songs. And a long time ago, maybe 20 years ago, I was looking to add something kind of more lighthearted to my show. And my husband said, why don't you do one of your dad's songs? And that's how it started.
Mm.
And a song about pie, I think I've done a song of my dad's in almost every show for years now. And I get a ton of requests for that song. it's very funny. And to say it's unusual is an understatement. It's certainly not like the rest of what I do. And, of course, it's, totally personal, because my dad wrote it, and I always talk about this at my shows. I have a CD now that I've made of that song and some others of my dad, of me singing my dad's songs, that is actually only available at my shows, so I always plug it. But it's one that audiences just love.
Well, I think it's original, and there's not a lot of people that love that, you know. But I do think there is a connection between the musical mind and the math mind, that there's a logic, there's a beauty to the way that, you know, music is balanced, and, you know, there are solutions, you know, if you will, there's pathways to the beginning of the song, to the end, to the middle, that work their way around, I think, in a bit of a mathematical way. I'm not a musicologist or a mathematician, but it seems to me that they're not that far apart as you might think.
What? I've never heard it described that way, and I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said. I mean, you know, there's a well-known connection between ability in math and ability in music, and I certainly don't understand it, and I'm not sure, you know, it has to do with some parts of the brain that are common to both. I was really good in math when I was a kid, so it's certainly true for me, too. They just both kind of come naturally to me. Well, I don't know if math still comes naturally to me. I have a 15-year-old daughter, and you know, the math she's doing, I'm incapable of helping her with unless I go back and relearn it. But at any rate, it's really true. There is a connection that is a little bit mysterious, and probably what you said is part of it.
Mm-hmm. No, it gets me kind of excited. Although, you know, I don't have the musical talent. I played clarinet, which is not anything, but once I reached the piano, I desperately wanted to learn to play the piano, and I love looking at music and reading music, but my hands never wanted to do one thing and then the other. Same thing on the guitar, you know, having both hands.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I couldn't get the brain to decide. They always wanted to be parallel, not separate. So.
Oh, wow.
I know. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting. Yeah.
maybe someday. I'm never too old to start something new, so that might be around the corner. You never know.
Absolutely.
And you have sung with some, I mean, amazing artists. One of the things you're known for is such a good harmonizer that a lot of people ask you to join them, and that is something I'm curious about, too, is the way that you are able to hear another voice and find the you know, piece that complements it without making it sound, you know, scratchy and, you know, ear turn off kind of noise. So that, because that feels like that's a really great skill and something that I don't know how you develop it. It feels like something you're just naturally attuned to, something in your mind is able to pick that up.
That's the way it's always seemed to me. Maybe it's something to some extent that can be taught. I certainly was never taught anything. It just was something I could do naturally. And the people I know who are really good at it, like my friend Sean Colvin, is just phenomenal at it. They never had to learn anything. I mean, so it is some weird kind of thing people are born with, I think. And I love doing it. It's one of my favorite things to do in life, is to harmonize with someone who's a really good singer or an interesting singer. So I'll never get tired of doing that.
Were you a singing family? Does that maybe where some of it you picked up, so everybody had to pick a different part?
No. I was the only one who really sang. I mean, one of my brothers has a pretty nice voice, and my father had talent, but he couldn't really sing. And my mother couldn't sing. No. I just I remember when I was maybe 14, I would record myself singing something on a tape recorder and then play it back so I could sing harmony with it. I don't have any idea.
Wow.
Even where I came up with that idea or why I wanted to do it, but it was obviously something I just knew how to do and wanted to do.
That's something I haven't heard before, but that clearly.
Oh, you haven't?
No, well, I mean, of harmonizing with yourself and your own voice.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I don't even think about. I have no idea where I got the idea to do that. Even we had, you know, a cassette recorder. I don't know. I never thought about that, and I don't remember. But I used to do that a lot. I loved doing it.
And that's funny because I used to use a tape recorder to record music off the air, and then we would exchange little stories with our cousins about our you know, different life happenings, and you know, here I am now doing radio. So,
right, there you go. You know, it's funny. You know, somebody said to a mother, I have a kid, and you know, I spent a lot of time around mothers and their kids in the last 15 years. And I remember one mother saying to me, well, you know, play, a lot of times playing is practicing for life. Mm-hmm. So in other words, a kid who's playing at being a banker is maybe learning how to do those things. So, I mean, I wasn't playing at it. I was doing it, but still I was practicing doing it. And I guess I ended up doing it for real as a career.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating thing. And you have, you know, such a great voice and a great story.
Thank you.
I know I only have a few more minutes, so I'm trying to decide on my list of questions here.
Maybe
I should just ask, I was curious about, so I'll have people, they can go and read on your website, which I forgot to write down the name. Do you mind?
LucyGaplansky.com.
Okay, so folks can go and check that out, because I think it's fascinating that you studied psychology and then, you know, but always kept singing. That's an interesting part of your story. What do you think it is about singing that keeps you coming back? Because even if you've had pathways that, you know, took you down different careers or different life stages, what is it about singing that brings you back?
That's a good question. I mean, I think about that sometimes because, you know, at some point, maybe I'll want to retire or something. Like, how long, you know, what, when would I want to stop? And I don't know if I would. I mean, I've been singing since I can remember, since I was really, really, really young, you know, maybe 4 or 5. And, you know, people ask me, I think people ask me, like, well, what feels good about it? And one description I've given a bunch of times is, you know, when you're walking outside on a beautiful spring day and it just feels great, that's what it's like.
Mm.
Especially so for me, I mean, just in general, I think, okay, so one of the things that I think drew me to singing and will always draw me to singing is singing a great song. There is nothing like that in the rest of my life. And I, you know, if I'm lucky, it's my song, but more often it's a great song by somebody else. And so the walking outside on a beautiful, beautiful day is a really good way to describe how that feels.
Mm.
Singing a great song. I just feel alive and connected to myself, and moved, and it's fun. It's all those things.
I think that's a perfect thing, because once you find that thing, it can sustain you then for many, many decades, even if you're not doing it all the time every day.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing. I'm not doing it all the time every day, and there are a lot of things I'm interested in that have nothing to do with music, and at some point in my life, like, I'd like to take a physics class. A lot of things. I love to learn, and I'm actually good at a lot of different kinds of I'll just say cognitive kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a really good student. So it's not like I want to limit myself to that, but I can't quite imagine ever not doing it.
That's exciting for us, because that means it'll be a great show, because it's clearly something you love, and that comes through, and we feel that in the audience. And so I hope there is I expect there'll be a sold out house for the 411 concert series this Saturday at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater. You can check out tickets at northfieldartsguild.org or visit lucykaplansky.com for all the details on her other shows in the Midwest if you want to travel around and see her. Thank you for joining me today. It's just truly been a pleasure.
Thank you. What a wonderful interview. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.